It's 7:41. I'm Xander Alloy. We visit Clay County on this West Virginia morning, where educators are revamping the idea of home economics class to inspire resilience in student populations.
We believe that the more confident kids are in themselves, so the better chance that they are making good decisions in life instead of making risky decisions.
That's coming up, but first a conversation about radioactive natural gas drilling waste. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Xander Alloy. Across the Ohio Valley every day, thousands of trucks filled with waste from natural gas drilling take to the roads. The waste contains radioactivity and poses threats to workers, communities, and the environment. Freelance science journalist Justin Noble spent nearly 2 years reporting on this topic. He interviewed hundreds of scientists, environmentalists, state regulators, and industry workers, and uncovered never-before-released early reports from the oil and gas industry that highlight the radioactivity problem and its risks to workers and the public. Energy and environment reporter Brittany Patterson spoke with Noble via Skype about his reporting published last month in Rolling Stone. Here's an excerpt of their conversation.
You use a character, a pseudonym of a character named Peter. Tell us where we meet him and tell us a little bit about him and his concerns.
Peter does a job that has become quite common across northern West Virginia, southwestern Pennsylvania, eastern Ohio, the heart of the Marcellus and also Utica shale areas. And that job is the job of brine hauler, or driving a truck that looks a bit like a septic truck, but is actually filled with this oil and gas waste product. The industry often refers to this product as brine or produced water, but what my reporting revealed is that this is very misleading. Brine, especially in the Marcellus, can have a very complicated mix of different chemicals in it. There's a lot of toxic heavy metals. There's what's known as volatile organics, these known human carcinogens like benzene, and then there's also radioactive elements such as radium. Drivers like Peter are told often that they're hauling water or that they're hauling salt water, and yet they're not. They're hauling this really complicated brew of chemicals that also has radioactivity in it.
What is the federal and state oversight of this activity?
So oil and gas waste has a stunning exemption that goes back to the late 1970s. The United States at that time knew there's a lot of industry and that industry regularly produces hazardous waste. And under a law called the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, the United States determined that it's going to appropriately label waste that is hazardous as hazardous. That means that waste can only go in certain types of trucks that are designed to carry hazardous waste. It can only go on certain routes that are appropriate for hazardous waste to be hauled on. Drivers will have to be appropriately trained, and the hazardous waste will have to end up in landfills that are appropriately designed to hold hazardous waste. And it was a good way, a cradle-to-grave way of dealing with hazardous waste, except oil and gas waste, all of these different waste streams produced at an oil and gas well, such as brine, such as drill cuttings, such as other materials like scales and sludges, these wastes all received an exemption. And what's just so striking is that the EPA actually looked at that exemption in 1988, and they determined that even though there are hazardous materials in oil and gas waste, there's uranium, there's toxic heavy metals, to label that waste as hazardous would cause a severe economic burden on the industry. There literally would not be enough landfills to deal with it. It would overwhelm regulators. And so the EPA sticks with this determination of non-hazardous. And everything we see happening today in regards to these trucks in the Marcellus, why are they not labeled? Why are these drivers not being told what's in them? It goes back to that exemption.
One of the really striking things about your story and the reporting you've done on this topic is sort of how deep you've gone. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the documents and research that you found and how that impacts workers' health?
Yeah, so in my reporting, I would be talking to workers working in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, talking to community members, and hearing things that were quite concerning when it came to how this material was being handled and just what the radioactive content might be. And there is the question, though, of, well, how concerning? What really are the risks, and just how worried should I be? And what helped answer that question was finding documents of the industry that conveyed that they had knowledge about this going back decades. And so some of the industry's most prominent organizations and publications have actually written about this topic. And that's significant because right now the industry still is actually denying that there's a serious problem. And yet when you look 30 and 40 years ago, the industry themselves wrote about this problem. I found a set of Louisiana legal cases only recently settled in 2016, that showed that oil and gas worker cancers had been linked indisputably to radioactivity exposure received on the job. That was just such a moment of alarm for me, because it confirmed that if this job and these different types of jobs are done for long enough, a worker actually can get cancer, and that cancer can kill them. So in Louisiana, workers got different types of lymphomas, different types of leukemias, colon cancer, liver cancer, kidney cancer.
Yeah. So we have the EPA that is sort of declining to regulate the disposal of this type of hazardous waste. And we have thousands of workers in this region that are working in this industry, hauling brine, but also involved in other parts of natural gas drilling. And it's an industry that's growing. What does this mean for the people who work in this industry, for those oil and gas workers?
There needs to be a massive health analysis done immediately. And what's so worrisome about the Louisiana cases is we know the signature of the brine in Louisiana. The radium levels are significantly less than they are in the Marcellus, about 8 to 9 times less. So no one has looked at what it means for a worker in the Marcellus to be handling different brine, scales, sludges, to be handling this oil and gas waste for a prolonged period of time. What's just been so striking is that workers continue to reach out to me. This is a difficult thing for them to do, but they're not getting help from the regulatory agencies. They're not getting help from their employers, certainly. And suddenly they've read this article, which has information that connects to things that they've been seeing and wondering about. And so with each week, really, since the story has been published, more people have been reached out, and many of them are workers, and they help fill in a picture that's already forming, and the picture is really a concerning one.
That was freelance science journalist Justin Noble speaking with reporter Brittany Patterson. Noble's investigation on the risks radioactive natural gas waste poses to workers, titled America's Radioactive Secret, was published last month in Rolling Stone. West Virginia Public Broadcasting reached out to the trade group, the West Virginia Oil and Natural Gas Association. In a statement, Executive Director Ann Blankenship said the industry is highly regulated and does not expose workers or the public to high levels of radiation. She said her association disagrees with the Rolling Stone article, calling it purposefully misleading, biased, and exaggerated. Not long ago, home economics was a staple in high school curriculums. Today, budget cuts and an emphasis on testing means most high schools no longer offer these classes. As a result, when kids graduate, they tend to know more about algebra than things like how to wash laundry. One West Virginia high school is trying to help these kids succeed by teaching them not just math and reading, but adulting. Kara Lofton reports that educators hope skills to manage life will help build resilience.
When we say go, you're going to pick up your baby. You are going to then go get baby clothes. You are going to go back to your table and you're going to change your baby's diaper.
Clay County High School is on its second year of hosting a giant school-wide adulting competition. What you're hearing is instructions for the baby relay.
Then you are going to put the clothes on the baby. It has to be zipped up, buttons buttoned, the whole deal.
The baby relay is the last event before 350 kids join a giant human-sized game of life. Voices bounce across the gym from wall to wall, but around the perimeter are stations in which students have to call the power company, like the actual power company, to report an outage, change a diaper on a doll, fill out a W-4 form, and take a quiz of tax term, among other things. To finish the game, teams have to land on all 7 skill spots and successfully complete the task. The whole day is the brainchild of school counselor Leslie Osborne.
We believe that the more confident kids are in themselves, so the more skills they have, the more confident they're going to be. And the more confident they are, the better chance that they are making good decisions in life instead of making risky decisions.
She estimates about 50% of the kids at her school are not living with their parents.
There's just so many demands on kids, whether it be academics. There's so many demands on adults now as far as, you know, different responsibilities. We do have a high percentage of kids that are in foster care and kids that are considered homeless under the McKinney-Vento Act. So sometimes the kids aren't, there is not a parent in the home.
In 2008, the West Virginia Department of Education rolled out a program called LINCS, which stands for Learning Individualized Needs, Knowledge, and Skills. According to the website, the goal of LINCS is to help students in grades 5 through 12 foster skills like work ethic, academic planning, and interpersonal or life skills. The Department of Education cites the program as one of the reasons West Virginia high school graduation rate went from 73% in 2008 to nearly 90% in 2016. And the kids seem to really like it.
You just learn a lot of life lessons.
That's Senior Logan Vance.
You learn throughout LINCS class, which is a program where you're in this class with the same people up until the point where you graduate. You become really close with these people and you just learn about how to live life with them, and it's a really good experience.
Although LINCS is available statewide, school counselor Osborne and school psychologist Kelly Duffield have done a lot of tweaking to the curriculum.
The main question that drives LINCS for us is, what do these students need to be successful adults?
That's Duffield.
And we've learned if we can take whatever that is, so for example, they need to be confident. If we can put practical skills behind that, then our teachers are comfortable teaching the skill. So we're not going to say, okay, guys, let's sit down today and talk about being confident. You've lost a high school kid, you know. But you can say, hey, today we're going to fill out a W-2, and then we're going to practice doing it. So we try to take that, those things like confidence, healthy relationships, having coping skills to be able to deal with challenges in life, and really find the skill that matches up with that. And then we ask our teachers, for 1 month, will you teach these skills?
Philip Dobbins is the civics and government teacher. He says some of it is teaching the skills and some of it is simply building a close-knit relationship with the kids so they feel comfortable asking for help. Every week, for instance, Dobbins says he checks their grades and asks if they're getting projects and homework done.
Let's, you know, be realistic. A lot of students in general maybe don't have that, someone to check on them. You know, some have parents that do, but many don't. So it really provides extra support for these students to help them be successful.
And the yearly adulting competition is like the test for all the skills the kids learn over the course of the year. Osborne says she doesn't know of any other school in the state or even the country doing LINCS quite like Clay. They're kind of making it up as they go along. But, she says, their efforts are guided by a modern psychotherapy approach called cognitive behavioral therapy. The theory is that if you can change thinking and behaviors, you can change feelings and improve mental health. Telling kids, say no to drugs, is no longer enough, if it ever was. But at Clay County High School, they're testing this idea that if you can improve their tool belt, students will make better choices simply because they have other options. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health and the Charleston Area Medical Center. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org, Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Caitlin Tan, Jessica Lilly, Kara Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Brittany Patterson, Eric Douglas, Corey Nollinger, Emily Allen, and Roxy Todd. Our news director and producer is Glennis Board. I'm Xander Alloy.